Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with his only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to the end of the week. Hot diggity. Well, I mean, for some it's kind of a hot diggity. For me, it's 2 days of keep it to yourself, Bob. It's the last day of the week. It's Friday. I've got a little good news. Thanks to the intrepidity of some horn listeners, I can say proudly that this evening we only need to find 15. We were at 29 last night. We only need to find 15 contributors to the Thrifty 250, and we'll be done pretty much for the week. And that's nice. It's nice to stop sweating a little bit. But, throw all that away. Fire up the blender. Get something cool and relaxing going, because it is Friday on the front porch on the horn, and dare I say it, yes, a rather special Friday on the front porch on the horn, because it's not just Friday on the front porch, it's Friday the 13th. Deemed unlucky beginning sometime around 1307. On Friday the 13th, 1307, it was a bad day to be Jacques de Molay or any of his other Knights Templar's followers, the poor soldiers of Jesus Christ, as they were known. Legend, and quite possibly apocrypha, has it that this was the day, Friday the 13th, that they were arrested by a king, a French king, Philip the Fair, he was called, Philip the Fourth, who had a hankering for all the money that the Knights Templars had accumulated over the course of, a couple of centuries of crusading or so. Maybe a century. How about that? I'm foggy. But in order to steal their money, he had to get something he could hang his hat on. He had to get some confessions that they were nasty, nasty heretics. So who better to aid in that attempt than, well, yes, of course, the church. And at first, the church gave Philip free rein to torture the daylights out of the poor soldiers of Jesus Christ. And to get them to say that, you know, they did things, that they worshiped things, and I don't know, were gay or something. Muslims, you know, it was the Crusades, everything was bad. And of course, all of the confessions were lies, desperate attempts by desperate and very ill-educated men just to make the pain and suffering stop. You know what I mean. And yet we find ourselves, yea, verily, some 700 years down the road later, and there are still people who think that torture is the very thing you need when it comes to information acquisition. Ugh. So it's Friday the 13th. Don't walk under any ladders. Don't step on any cracks. What else? Throw salt over your shoulder. You know, whatever makes you happy. But just remember that all Fridays the 13th are commemorations of torture. Torture. Wow. Just in the last couple of minutes, we've gone from needing 15 to needing 10 members of the Thrifty 250. This could be over in a hurry. Thank you very, very much. Where to begin? You know, Friday on the front porch is kind of a relaxed thing. It's spring here. The smell of freshly cut grass is in the air because Horn intern junior grade Ferg is out pushing the mower, hopefully nowhere near the studio. And it's got that spring cut grass kind of mixed with gasoline, small engine exhaust. It's a nice smell. So it's relaxing time. I honest to God, you know, I was thinking about it the other day. I still do maintain the unreasonable fantasy of building a better studio someday. And I love natural light, and I love passive solar. And I was thinking how gorgeous it would be to be able to set up a situation where, on a beautiful evening like this, we could crank up the Ustream camera and do the show from outside. Wouldn't that be nice? That'd be a lot of fun. And maybe someday it will happen. But this would be a day to fire up the Jimmy Buffett Margaritaville brand frozen concoction machine. Have you seen those things? They got like 8-barrel carbs and dual exhausts and mud flaps and chrome trim, and it cost about $500. They've got one that's actually battery powered. You can run it from your car, from your auxiliary jack in your automobile. But this would be the day for that. Kick the boots off, put the feet up, enjoy the beverage of your choice, be it lemonade or, as I have here, sweet tea. Or, you know, the hard stuff out of the crockery jug over there with the corn cob stopper. By the way, this is not a paid advertisement, but for those of you trying to avoid high fructose corn syrup as we do here, and who don't like to necessarily always have to squeeze a bunch of lemons every time you want to make lemonade, even though life is constantly handing them to you, you might want to consider... I'm real tickled with this stuff. It's called Simply Lemonade. It's from the Simply Orange Juice. Simply, I guess it's from the Simply Company. Yeah, the Simply Orange Juice Company. Contains pure filtered water, natural sugar, lemon juice, natural flavors. I don't know what the natural flavors are. But it's darn fine lemonade. In a blender, whatever. It does some wonderful things on a warm day like this. But of course, this is professional internet broadcasting, not of the right-wing variety, so I will continue with my long-standing pledge not to do Limbaugh radio and thus not to open the microphone whacked out of my mind and to try heroically to remain sober for the entirety of the 3 hours of each program each night. So for now, it's just straight lemonade. See, what wouldn't the Simply Lemonade people give to have an endorsement like that? But they're just too corporate. Just too corporate. But anyway, relax. Bring to the table whatever you feel like you would like to discuss. I've got a couple of things. First of all, just from a pure humor perspective. Just because whenever you see a story like this, you're grateful to the gods for handing it to you. I'm sure you've seen that television show hosted by, what is it, Jeff Foxworthy or whatever, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? Well, I'm proud to announce to you that the question now is more along the lines of, is Michelle Bachmann smarter than a 10th grader? Michelle Batshit Crazy Bachmann has been challenged by a 10th grader, and I know this will warm the cockles of Maura's heart, a 10th grader from New Jersey. And Andy's heart as well. I think Andy's a Jersey guy. A 10th grader from New Jersey by the name of Amy Myers has thrown down the gauntlet to Michelle Bachmann and called upon her for a public debate or a basic fact test regarding the Constitution of the United States of America, or COTUS. See, we have SCOTUS, COTUS, POTUS, SOTUS, HEROTUS. This is COTUS, Constitution of the United States. Listen to this letter. This is beautiful. Hey, Amy Myers. Not even a little golf clap. Big clap. Ovation clap. As a typical high school student, I have found quite a few... This is a letter addressed to... No, really, Michelle Bachmann. As a typical high school student, I have found quite a few of your statements regarding the Constitution of the United States, the quality of public school education, and general U.S. civics matters to be factually incorrect, inaccurately applied, or grossly distorted. The frequency and scope of these comments prompted me to write this letter. That's pretty tough language from a 10th grader. Though I am not in your home district, or even your home state, you are a United States representative of some prominence who is subject to national media coverage. News outlets and websites across this country profile your causes and viewpoints on a regular basis. As one of a handful of women in Congress, you hold a distinct privilege and responsibility to better represent your gender nationally. Whoa, call out. The statements you make help to serve an injustice to not only the position of the Congresswoman, but women everywhere. Whoa. That is very nicely worded, and it translates as, you are a disgrace to your gender. Man, Amy Myers, stay off small aircraft. Serve an injustice to not only the position of Congresswoman, but women everywhere. You know who else is in New Jersey? Cassie is in New Jersey, getting very near the end of her freshman year at Princeton. The first person I thought of when I saw this story was Cassie. Because this sounds like something Cassie would do. The statements you make help to serve an injustice to not only the position of Congresswoman, but women everywhere. Though politically expedient, incorrect comments cast a shadow on your person, and by unfortunate proxy, both your supporters and detractors alike often generalize this shadow to women as a whole. Man, that is some college-level writing, isn't it? I mean, that's the stuff, you know, the shiv is way past the ribs before Michelle Bachmann even gets done with the dictionary and figures out she'd been cut. Though politically expedient, incorrect comments cast a shadow on your person, and by unfortunate proxy, both your supporters and detractors alike often generalize this shadow to women as a whole. That's the second accusation of you are a disgrace to your gender. But now playtime's over. Representative Bachmann, the frequent inability you have shown to accurately and factually present even the most basic information about the United States led me to submit the following challenge pitting my public education against your advanced legal education. Advanced legal education. I'm guessing that Michelle Bachmann graduated from the Draw the Parrot School of Law, you know, with the matchbook and stuff. And thus, the throwing of the gauntlet. I, Amy Myers, do hereby challenge Representative Michelle Bachmann to a public forum debate and or fact test on the Constitution of the United States, United States history, and United States civics. Hopefully, we will be able to meet for such an event, as it would prove to be enlightening. Sincerely yours, Amy L. Myers. Gotta do it again. Lord, I'm proud of her. Because it seems, as a 10th grader, Amy L. Myers has figured out that the way you deal with these thugs is not to say, well, you know, can't we all just get along? Somebody pass me my tambourine and my castanets and my kazoo, and I'll play me some, I'll play Kumbaya. And no. You confront them. You let them know that you know that they are what they are. Ron and Raleigh, subject line, Michelle Bachmann, BSC, paren R, close paren, you know what, BSC, bat weren't crazy. Bob, I'd say Ms. Myers has laid the smackdown on Representative Bachmann's candy ass. I'm guessing Representative Bachmann will avoid this debate like the plague. But see, this is where it falls to people like us. For instance, activists in Michelle Bachmann's district in Minnesota. You know they're not working next week, right? Those tireless, hard-working guardians of the rights of the people, the Republican Party, and John Boehner in particular, have declared next week a holiday. The whole darn week. This week was just another week in Washington without a jobs bill. You know, remember, where are the jobs, John? It was about the jobs. Remember the jobs, John? Just another week without a jobs bill. Well, apparently, Michelle Bachmann will be home. Well, or at least in Minnesota. I think home is probably some planet on, you know, orbiting Zordlap 3. But she'll have her little antennae tucked away, and she'll be there in her district in Minnesota, I suspect, next week. And this would be a grand time for progressives, liberals, you know, decent people in Minnesota, to make sure that everywhere Michelle Bachmann goes, she is pursued by the question, when are you going to debate the 10th grader? Hey, Michelle, you afraid of the 10th grader? When are you going to debate the 10th grader, Michelle? When are you going to set the 10th grader straight about all those U-2 boats? And how the shot fired around the world was fired at Concord, New Hampshire. Where's it going to be, Michelle? U-2 boats. One of the Horn's greatest hits. You can look up We All Live in a U-2 Submarine on YouTube. That was a video that Matt Osborne put together. Oh, Lordy. U-2 boats. Shot fired, heard round the world, fired at Concord, New Hampshire. Wow. But Amy L. Myers deserves our support. Now, it would be nice if we had a responsible, legitimate, for-profit media, and they would pick up Amy Myers' cause as well. Because, you know, Michelle Bachmann's a real publicity hound. And she's a hound. But she's a publicity hound, and she loves her some camera. And it would be nice if the for-profit media would ask her, you've been challenged to a basic fact test about American history, American civics, and the Constitution, Representative Bachman. When are you going to schedule that? Or are you afraid of the 10th grader who might beat your ass like a borrowed mule? Because you know that's what would happen, right? I mean, it would be a drubbing, a thumping. It probably wouldn't even be fair. Even if you gave Michelle some sort of a, three or four questions wrong cushion. Because she's an idiot. You wouldn't be 5 minutes into the into the discussion before she'd start talking about how Jesus is in the Declaration of Independence and what happened when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor. But I have hope. I get downright happy when I see stories about people like Amy Myers. Like I said, she reminds me of our own Cassie. Let's see. The story at the Minnesota Independent notes that Bachman has received more than one pants on fire notation from PolitiFact for just outright lying. Anderson Cooper, when he's not down broadcasting from in front of the Calliope machine, has nailed her for what she doesn't know about history. And now a 10th grader from New Jersey has told her that she is a disgrace to her gender and a moron into the bargain. And a little child shall lead them. Right? Yeah. So that seems a lovely place to start. News Ninja Susan noted with regard to torture, Bush should pay attention because Jacques Vallée cursed both King Philip and the Pope as they lit the stake. They were both dead within the year. It's true. So they say. What's interesting out of that whole exchange is that later on, in unearthing documents that had been suppressed by the church or lost by the church, you know, they got a lot of documents there. They actually found a document executed by the Holy Father in which he exonerated Jacques de Molay. It was a little late, though, because by then Jacques had been pretty much reduced to charcoal. But he tried. So there's that. And then there's John Ensign. The John Ensign story. You know, last night the coverage that Rachel Maddow gave the John Ensign story was inspiring. It was meticulously researched. It was cool. It was factual. And it reminded me, it was a reminder to us all of what journalism can and should be. And it was heartbreaking and sleazy and slimy and dirty, necessarily fundamentalist, necessarily with it being all of those things, fundamentalist Christianity was involved. Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma, a pontificating horse's ass, it's not really pimp, broker? Yeah, it was his job to negotiate the payoff to hush up this man and this woman whose lives had been driven into rack and ruin by this fine, upstanding follower of Christ, John Ensign. Remember, he lived at the C Street house. One of the C Street fellas had to call him at one point and say, I know where you are, I know what you're doing, put your pants on and go home. Could that be the new Republican slogan for 2012? Vote GOP, we'll put our pants on and go home. The man that John Ensign helped to cuckold is under indictment now for his role in this sad and sorry mess. The woman that John Ensign treated like one of the characters from Les Liaisons Dangereuses. French is real rusty. Dangerous Liaisons, y'all. She is a shattered woman who has scraped up enough money to move to California and is trying to rebuild her life. She and her husband are divorced. Their children, who were attending nice private schools, are either graduated or back in public school. And John Ensign is walking free. Astonishing, isn't it? And Susan asks a question, and it is the question of the hour. Why isn't Tom Coburn under indictment? And that's the million-dollar question, because if all of this activity was in fact criminal in nature, then at the very least, Coburn has involved himself in a felonious conspiracy. Conspiracy is the single just about the easiest crime for any federal prosecutor to indict upon. You may have heard the old saying that a federal prosecutor who's worth his salt can go to a federal grand jury and indict a ham sandwich. That would seem to mean that it shouldn't be any great leap to get Tom Coburn. We can't get them for starting illegal wars that will ultimately cost us something over $3 trillion. We can't get them for raping the American Treasury. We can't get them for domestic spying. We can't get them for the aforementioned torture. But maybe we can get one of them. Just one. Tom Coburn. For taking the good offices of a United States Senate seat and using it for the sleazy business of brokering the end of a sickening compulsory sexual relationship far more reminiscent of the doings of ancient Rome than of anything calling itself a modern culture. Yeah, sorry about the buffer up there for a minute. I need these emails and these little PMs from time to time, because the streamer's actually out of the corner of my eye. So thanks to Ben and Susan, Randall and David in Tennessee. David noting, buffer 0%, you're over to the mincing fawn portion of the stream. Oh, by the way, going back to Amy Myers for a minute, Ron and Raleigh notes, I see a problem. My question is, who would be the moderator? It can't be someone that would be considered a liberal, and Sean Hannity is as stupid as Representative Bachman. Well, I guess I am known as a liberator, liberal. Liberator? No, I'm not a B-24. A liberal. But nonetheless, let me offer my services. I would be more than happy to moderate that discussion. Or if it turns out to be a written test, to proctor it. The temptation to simply stand over Michelle Bachmann's shoulder and chuckle the whole time would be profound, but I think I could probably control myself long enough to simply make sure she didn't cheat. So we've got the offer. I would be happy to do it for my country. But the question remains, and it truly is the question of the hour. Has Tom Coburn been referred to the United States Attorney for the District of Columbia for possible criminal charges? In the John Ensign affair. And a second question while we're at it. Why was Tom Coburn not made a proper party to the ethics investigation itself? Because while John Ensign did sleazy, nasty, filthy things, Tom Coburn, in acting as his second, his enabler, his broker, did things that were every bit as equally sleazy. And for all the things that we have been forbidden from having, justice over the starting of the Iraq War, justice over the domestic spying, justice over torture, please, may we have this one moment of real justice. Not the phony high-caliber justice of going in and blowing away a man in a bare-wired room watching a 19-inch TV set. But the real justice that involves prosecutors and defense counsel and juries and a judge. Yes, in the end, just justice. Can we have that? So those are some starting places for the evening. If you want to get in on the conversation, like I said, it's Friday on the front porch, and you are welcome to dial in. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. Friday on the front porch. And it's ever so much easier when you fill the lines up early on a night like this so that we're not trying to race toward the finish to get everybody in. Don't hide your light under a bushel, brethren and sistren. Get yourself a cool, relaxing drink and come on over to the conversation. It's just fine. This is The Horn.
Surprise. Here she comes again. When she
Oh, come on. If you had the chance to DJ, you'd pick that tune, too. You know you would. Because that's one of the saddest parts of the whole sorry John Ensign affair. It was his best friend's wife. But see, this is how Republicans operate. They have no morals. They have no standards. Standards are something that exist for you and me. Ron and Raleigh noting, once again, we have a two-tiered justice system. Nothing will happen to these people. Remember, Vitter is still in Congress and, well, I'm afraid, Ron, I believe you're mistaken. Old wide stance Larry Craig. No, he bowed out, I'm happy to say. But Vitter still is. And any other... right. But this one cries out for justice. John Ensign, in his Republican self-righteousness... Remember, this was a guy who lived at C Street. These people who consider themselves far more holy than any other people on the planet. And, of course, he could engage in this conduct because being more holy than other people on the planet, he is not held to the same standards. Standards are for pissants like us, you understand. To the phones we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening.
Hey, Jim.
How are you tonight?
I'm well. It's a lovely day and just, you know, happy to be behind the mic.
You got your pants on?
I'm not doing naked radio tonight.
Oh, that's too bad. Gosh, Bob.
Well, I mean, the weekend's not here until 9 p.m., so...
I see. Who is that you just played? It sounded like the Cars.
That was the Cars, yeah, my best friend's girl.
Rick Ocasek?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I listened to him an awful lot. Sure did. Well, let me tell you, Michelle Bachmann is now on her way. Since I call her Princess Precious,
mm-hmm.
He is flinging her way right now through the Moronosphere to the planet Porno.
I can well believe it.
Because basically, she verges on the ideological and intellectual pornographic, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I personally believe that she has the noble gases or ignoble gases from the Moronosphere pumped directly into her home and office.
Well, I was thinking somewhere else.
And that's only because it's Friday and you're incorrigible. We understand.
I know. Listen, today on the local radio, our favorite person was talking about the election tomorrow, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I called him up and told him that I wanted him to write my name in. And he asked me, well, what name are you going to write? What should I write in? And I said, I'm running under the name of Hard Case Williams. And my platform is make it a place where men and men and sheep are nervous.
I thought we were already there, but...
He asked me why the sheep were nervous.
You know, you can't work with people like that, Jim.
Oh, sure you can. I love working with him. He brightens my day with his intellect and his... Okay. He really does. Oh, my Lord, it's been a day. But anyway, what did I want to say? Oh, this fellow you were talking about. Exactly. Why didn't he have his pants on? I mean, what was he up to? Was he frivoling around in, you said, C Street?
Well, yeah, he was a member of the C Street House. But by that time, the woman's husband had asked the head of C Street to do an intervention, basically, and make him stop tormenting the other man's wife. But he wouldn't. He was relentless, and he used, you know, he had tremendous sway over her and her family because he bought their house, he put their children through school, the family took them on very expensive vacations and made cash payouts, and both of them worked in Ensign's office. So he owned them, and he wouldn't leave the woman alone. And at the instant that we're talking about, the husband had called the head of C Street and said, "Do something. I've seen both of their cars in a hotel parking lot in somewhere Nevada. Do something." And so the C Street guy picks up the phone, calls John Ensign, and says, "I know where you are. I know what you're doing. Put your pants on and go home."
Oh, my.
I mean, this is the worst kind of sexual predation.
Well, obviously.
I mean, your heart just breaks for the woman. This is no pox on both of your houses kind of thing.
And a sow's there for your reward, absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
But out of all of this, so, you know, there's been a reference made to the U.S. Department of Justice.
Yeah.
But so far, there's no indication that any reference has been made of Tom Coburn, Jim. And remember, this is Tom Coburn. This is a guy who got to the Senate of the United States in part by whipping up a frenzy in Oklahoma by claiming that there was a rampant outbreak of lesbianism in the seventh grade in Oklahoma schools.
Let's see, lesbian.
Uh-huh.
Lesbian. Was he talking about Lebanese?
Yeah, I don't think this had anything to do with little schoolgirls from Beirut, Jim.
I just remember one time on the Golden Girls when one of the girls had a friend who was a lesbian, and Blanche didn't know what a lesbian was, and Ruby Flanahan was saying, lesbian. Into Danny Thomas. Listen, I mentioned a book to you the other day, or it's called One Nation Under Sex, written by Larry Flint and a guy named David Eisenbach, who's a PhD.
Mm-hmm.
It is truly a must read.
Available for Kindle?
I don't know about Kendall, but I've got it in hard copy, and I've just been sitting down with that, and I have just been laughing my ass off, particularly under the section, the chapter called The Sex Czar, referring to J. Edgar Hoover.
Well, I need to get my hands on that.
Well, I mean, you talk about Washington. Nothing in Washington, of course, having lived there for a number of years, nothing in Washington surprises me. But Hoover, basically, had the entire FBI staffed at his house 24 hours a day. I don't know if this was one over on Branch Avenue or the place where he moved to near Military Road. Anyway, he had him install a toilet seat with a warmer on it, an electric toilet seat, and then they had to redo it because it was too high or too low. And one day, he went out to get his morning paper, and he found feces on his front stoop and just went ape shit. He just went, ape, absolutely crazy. And his buddy Clyde Tolson was there, and they sent the offending turd to the Smithsonian to have it analyzed because they thought that one of his detractors had thrown it up there as a prank. And the offending item wasn't duly analyzed, and it was found to have raccoon droppings. And the FBI people surrounded Hoover's house for the next couple of nights, and one morning the neighbor's cat was found splattered up against the wall of Hoover's house.
Dear God.
I'll tell you, I saw the movie today, and I've never seen it before. I think it's called The People versus Larry Flint. Have you ever seen
it? Oh, that's a brilliant film, yeah.
Yeah, and Larry Flint actually served as a judge in the movie.
Right.
And
Woody Harrelson turned in a masterful performance, as did Courtney Love.
Oh, well, absolutely. And particularly when he had that case against Falwell, and in court kept calling him Fartwell.
Bless him.
I'm telling you, it was really something else. And
you know, if that man, if there is a heaven, Larry Flint's place in it is assured. If he did nothing more than shorten Jerry Falwell's life by a day or a month or a year or what, that's doing God's work.
Well, I didn't realize this, but Flint had to go to the Supreme Court and won.
Yes,
against Reverend Fartwell, or whatever you want to call him.
And it went down as a significant addition to the law of civil procedure in this country.
Yes, it certainly did. Absolutely.
Because the standard at the time was New York Times versus Sullivan, and Falwell versus Hustler, or whatever it's called, is now the standard referent for issues on things like pretrial summary judgments and so forth.
Well, I figure that case would certainly be a landmark decision in American jurisprudence, that's for sure. But it was a very interesting movie. It really was. It's really kind of sad in a way.
Do you know what it was that engendered that first suit, the parody ad that ran in Hustler?
Well, yeah, it was a bottle of Campari, which I love dearly. Matter of fact, I'm having a glass of it right now over shaved ice. And also something about Falwell's mother doing something.
Right, you never forget your first time.
Yep, in a chicken coop.
Yes.
I thought, oh, Lord have mercy. This guy, he really had a pair of cojones. He really did. And Falwell just went completely nuts. But the way Woody Harrelson portrayed himself in court and stuff like that, I mean, did they really put Flint in a federal psychiatric unit?
I do believe so.
I'm probably sure they did back in those days. I'm sure they did. But I thought it was a very good film, and it certainly, made its impression upon me. But I did want to share that section of the book, One Nation Under Sex. And, by the way, the first chapter is called The Founding Fornicator.
Well, there was no small amount of, sexuality.
Oh, yeah. And it was an excellent read. And it is a very good read. It certainly is.
Well, I have the offending ad here before me now, and it's beautiful. Jerry Falwell talks about his first time. Falwell, because that was a Campari ad campaign of the day. And Falwell, my first time was an outhouse outside Lynchburg, Virginia. Interviewer, wasn't it a little cramped? Falwell, not after I kicked the goat out. I see. You must tell me all about it. I never really expected to make it with Mom, but then after she showed all the other guys in town such a good time, I figured, what the hell? But your mom, isn't that a bit odd? I don't think so. Looks don't mean that much to me in a woman. And then the last thing, and you just don't know exactly what it is that made him craziest, but the last exchange... Did you ever try it again? Sure, lots of times, but not in the outhouse. Between Mom and the shit, the flies were too much to bear. Interviewer, we meant the Campari. Oh, yeah, I always get sloshed before I go out to the pulpit. You don't think I could lay down all that bullshit sober, do you?
Well, Bob, that's an offense to Campari. It's my favorite aperitif.
Campari is lovely, yes.
Yeah. I will never forget the first time I went to a liquor store somewhere. Where was it? I don't know where it was. And I asked the person working in the liquor store where they kept the aperitifs. And she said, a pair of what?
Go to the dentist for aperitif.
Oh, boy. Well, she said, a pair of what? Then I said, she wanted them. She said, oh, what is that Campari? And I said, well, it's an aperitif. I said, like a... Before dinner cordial. It's red. And it has...
Yeah, it's only 24% alcohol, for heaven's sakes.
But it is so good, and it makes a wonderful Negroni, too.
Well, that's the only way you can make one, isn't it?
That's it. I mean, but it certainly adds, it's just, that's...
Italy has its Campari. England has its Pimm's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just thought I would start your show off on that silly note. I'm not being very serious tonight, and I am, well, sometimes I am, most of the time I'm not, but I just wanted to share my experience of having seen that film today and also having, well, I finished the book by Larry Flint and his co-writer, and I found both to be quite illuminating.
You know, I really do. I love that parody, and I hope it's because I'm mean. I hope it drove Jerry Falwell to some sort of crisis of faith distraction.
Well, it certainly took up a good deal of his time. That's for sure.
And, you know, David in Tennessee asking a very valid question. He says, you suppose maybe losing that case is the reason the evangelicals began to found their own law schools, install their own strict constructionists and litmus tests for servants of God? And I think he's got a real point.
Yeah, he might be. I think he does. Absolutely.
Because remember, even as we speak, various and sundry departments of government are molded like a Swiss cheese with graduates of the Patrick Henry School of Law and the Pat Robertson School of Law and the Jerry Falwell School of Law. Even though, not a one of them could give you a decent decent rundown of the holding from Hadley versus Baxendale.
Oh, Bob, you don't have to tell me about those people because I've had to deal with them. I've dealt with some of those graduates of those institutions, and you're right, absolutely.
Well, Jim, you have yourself a wonderful weekend.
And the same to you, sir.
All right, take care.
Good night.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim, getting things lightheartedly started for a Friday on the front porch. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra, what's up?
Hey, so, this ain't that lighthearted. So, have you heard the latest from
Fukushima?
Japan?
Yeah, it's not a good day over there.
Well, I mean, that just sounds like, you know, the potential worst-case scenario is unfolding.
No, this is China syndrome. This is core on the floor.
Right.
And through the floor, and the water's leaked out, and it's in the containment vessel and quite possibly in the general radiation reactor building.
Right. And the other one that's killing me is the leaning one, number four, that's leaning.
But this, you know, I don't think that this was offered as breaking news, Sandra, but I don't think it is. I think a lot of people have known that was there for quite a while.
No, I understand, but it's just kind of, you know, this has been going on for 9 weeks now. And I just feel like at least the Northern Hemisphere is just being awash in radiation.
And meanwhile?
And they keep shutting off all the mechanisms for measuring it. Like, it's just incredible.
Right, well, because we've had that discussion about the fact that Americans cannot cope with that.
Well, I understand, but if it's not a flood or tornadoes, people can't deal with it. They don't.
Well, see, a flood and tornadoes and hurricanes and stuff, you can blame on, you can say that it's God's will because of the gays. But it's really a little harder to do that with a case like what happened in Fukushima, because that's a clear-cut case of human negligence.
I know. Well, you consider in Japan, them are some concrete-pouring motherfuckers, and they couldn't put no concrete around their diesel backup systems near the sea. Hello?
Yeah, how do you get there? How do you get to that point? I mean, that's what I mean. That's just plain old-fashioned, boring negligence, gross negligence.
Yeah. You know, it's not like they don't have the resources. That's the thing, since that's one of them countries that have highways to nowhere and bridges all around, right?
Right.
Yeah, anyway, I don't know. I guess it's. I'm a little bit more hysterical because I'm on the West Coast, as you very well know. And I'm like tripping because the various agencies are like, by design, oh, well, we're not measuring fish and oh, well, no more milk measurements. And for all intents and purposes, every place I've looked and, you know, that's meaningful, they're all saying, yeah, you know, you might want to take a step back from the milk.
And the ice cream. And the yogurt, yeah, and the cottage cheese,
and the seafood coming up, because, you know, they can swim.
Yeah, you know, we were, because they can swim. Yeah, I know. They're not staying in the containment radius, are they?
No, but it's just kind of the whole mentality. It's like the whole idea there's an ocean between us, and people just are complacent and weird. It's just like,
But
I don't know.
No, but the water moves, and see, the thing, I mean, I had one of those stupid moments the other day, Sandra. Monday, I had to be down in Charleston for a meeting where we were discussing what the Appalachian apocalypse is doing to the health of people here. And on the way back, I looked at Agnes. You know, we don't get out very much, and we certainly don't get out to places that have much more beyond Wendy's and McDonald's. But Charleston, the state capital, is my old stomping grounds. And I looked at her and said, honey, what do you say we go to lunch? And she said, sure. And I said, what would you like? And she said, sushi. And so automatically I went, sure. Love it. And so we're sitting there eating, and I just kind of kept a poker face because about halfway through lunch, you know, I'm having some little tuna roll and, you know, she's having some little something. And about halfway through lunch, I looked up and went, Bob Kincaid, you dumbass. What? Yeah, sure. Have a little spicy tuna roll, and how about a few mega rims of a couple of micro joules or rentgens or whatever we're measuring. Yeah, I don't know, a little strontium 90. Why don't you?
Well. And especially if you sort of buy into Helen Caldicott and the whole internal business, yeah, you don't want to eat nothing. You know, I mean, it's bad enough on the outside, but apparently it's, you know, ingesting this is the huge problem.
And that's, you know, that's why I believe it was the beginning of the week when we had the story, what is it that's poison? Oh, yeah, the poison bread.
Oh, you know what? I missed that.
I don't think you've got to worry about it, but a whole bunch of other states do.
Was that the state, all the states that you named?
Yeah.
Yeah, you named California. That's some bread?
Yeah. Yeah, lightly seasoned with metal shavings.
Yeah, right, but what, you remember what the brand was?
Yeah, Cobblestone Mills and a whole bunch of English muffin brands.
And what huge conglomerate makes that?
They are out of they're out of Georgia. Darn it.
Is it General Mills?
Oh no. I mean Cobblestone is a massive bakery complex that's owned by I'll have it here in a second. There it is. Yeah, Flowers Foods. Flowers Foods.
Oh, because, I mean, because you know with, I just sort of had a flash. I don't know if you remember back in the 80s, there was this commercial that used to come on talking about different products, and then they would say Beatrice, and Beatrice was the parent company.
Right.
And they were quite proud to let you know that all these products was under the umbrella.
Yeah, because the slogan was, we're Beatrice.
Right, but you notice how it's completely reversed now because of how horrific the reputations of these huge conglomerates are. Now they do the opposite. They try to make you think like Walmart with their little stores they want to put in New York is just kind of, you know, I'm just asking you if it was some sort of huge conglomerate.
Yeah, it's Flowers Foods of Thomasville, Georgia. And it's it was Cobblestone Mill, Natural Grains, Nature's Own, Sweet Bay, and all of these, yeah, whole wheat English muffins.
Not Sara Lee.
No, they don't own Sara Lee. Is like I think Sara Lee is one notch ahead of them on the profits made and products put out. Sara Lee's actually bigger than Flowers, but Flowers is trying to get there.
It's also owned by some corporation like Frito-Lay or something, or Nestle, too.
Or maybe Yum Brands.
It's
right.
Huge. Well, okay. So
the bread's,
bread.
Yeah, the bread's poisoned. Don't drink the milk. Don't eat the cottage cheese. Leave the yogurt alone. I mean, you remember probably a year ago when I was just waxing rhapsodic because I had been, David in Tennessee had given me a quart of Nancy's yogurt from out in Oregon.
Oh, Nancy's, yeah. Why? What's wrong with Nancy's?
Well, no, I mean, nothing's wrong with Nancy's not being in Oregon, you know, in the direct path of the damn radiation couldn't cure.
Because a Nancy was sort of no, all of it is totally suspect, and I mean, the thing is, it is so awesome in what's going on. I'm not using awesome in a nice way. I just don't know, you know, the media, they don't want to deal with it, and who can wrap their head around it? And I keep seeing those TEPCO officials, they're all looking ashen, more ashen every time they pop up.
And I think that's because by the time they get to the microphone and the cameras, Sandra, they've known what's going on for about 2 weeks.
Well, that's the thing. And also, you know, because I stumbled upon that nuclear Ginza hell, you know, I just feel sick. Because, you know, now I'm, like, unfortunately not blissfully ignorant anymore, and I realize that there could be tens of thousands of poor Japanese people down in there working. Because they said it was the first time they went into one. Who went into one?
Yeah, how many? For how long? Right.
Like,
I found out a little bit more about the Burukamin.
Yeah.
That untouchable peasant class.
Yeah.
They became through tradition untouchable because they were in the feudal days of Japan the leather workers.
Right. Okay.
And so they were somehow repulsive to the Buddhist hierarchy.
Yeah, and I told you the legal status didn't change until 1871.
So, right,
I mean,
right.
There's that, but I hear what you're saying.
So you've got a class of people, you know, what the hell if a few thousand of them die, you know?
Well, I just think there must be loads because, you know, with that, anyway, it's just, yeah, I think that a huge portion, like we had talked about when this thing first started, I really do think that a huge portion of that island may really not be inhabitable. I just read where they are finding, you know, higher levels on the outskirts of Tokyo.
Well, what are they going to be, Sandra, when this unit's water that they think has gotten through the floor, out of the containment vessel, into the reactor building proper? Well, you know what? At that point, there's really nothing that stops the radiation that's in it. At what point? I mean, does it spread like radiation from a bomb at that point? Does it just go bubbling off into the atmosphere?
Well, no. Apparently, the mixing with the concrete is producing all sorts of noxious chemicals, right, you know, too. So any encounter with anything.
And remember, it's also, I think it was Chris from Vancouver who was explaining, it's the degradation into heavy metals that provides the two part of the 1-2 radiation heavy metal punch.
Right, and Greenpeace is, you know, basically panicking, like, please don't flood it with more water because you're going to destroy the integrity of the installation. So, I'm sorry, I don't know. I'm not a nuclear scientist, please. But I'm trying to put two and two together, and it ain't adding up. It's adding up to, oh, shit, we don't have they don't know what the hell is going to happen. They don't know how to deal with it. That's what it's adding up to be. And I don't appreciate the sort of silent treatment that we're hearing around the world. You understand what I'm saying?
I absolutely do. And, you know, one of the creepiest aspects of all of this is the fact that, you know, suddenly the monitors are offline and you know, they peg, and, you know, so therefore they can't be relied upon. And you know, I will go the extra mile to keep from engaging in conspiracy grand scheme kind of stuff. But I also have, you know, say of me what you will, I have a very low opinion of the American people's ability to deal with real crisis.
Well, and there's also, you know, I'm not, I try not to go that route either, but, you know, I also know who the hell, you know, Pastor Malthus was, too, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes, I do.
And so I'm like, you know, we can do a kill-off. I mean, who knows what goes on in the minds of these sociopaths who are running things? Because,
But if the, I guess what I was getting at, Sandra, is if these monitors are offline, then when people just quietly, because, you know, it's not going to be, you know, 170 people, or it's not going to be people floating face down like in Katrina. It's not going to be the entire towns wiped out like with the recent tornado disaster. It's going to be a person here and a person there, and it might add up to a whole boatload of people. But it's not going to be relevant numerically relevant enough, for instance, for the for-profit media to pick up on it and say, wait a minute, 10,000 people just died.
Yeah, and also because of the wind, it's, you know, the cancers are just going to pop up all over the northern hemisphere. I mean, yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I'm also disturbed by the just the sort of complete shutdown of these sort of fascist corporations and government partnerships, you know? I mean, and you gotta really wonder what is on deck for those Japanese people. I mean, a whole island, I swear to God, because how they gonna stop it?
Right, because this is a million times worse than God. You know, we discussed the fact that, like, the Godzilla movies are analogies for nuclear disaster, but, you know, they usually manage to deal with Godzilla at the end of the movie. And I'm being real shallow here. I'm not trying to be, but I am. But there's none of that kind of solution for this.
Well, no, there is. I mean, the thing is it just seems. Yeah, I'm just wondering what the solution is, and the apologies are not doing it anymore. They seem to be apologizing daily, and it's just like, no, you're raising limits and allowing children, I repeat, children, to exist. You're not evacuating them. The whole evacuation area is now up to 80 miles, not 20. So why are those people still there? Straight up, why are they still there, and why do you have school for the little children with contaminated playgrounds?
I think it's because they don't, there's, and this is a bitter thing to even say, Sandra.
Children,
and there's, you know, the cancers that we're talking about may not come along for 10, 20,
right,
30 years.
That's why I'm talking about the little kids, and that's why,
right,
I'm concerned.
Not, and they got nowhere to go.
Where, not because of me, I'm thinking about these little 8-year-olds, you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
And that's my thing. I'm like, well, what about these pregnant women right now? Hello, what's happening around the world? What's that generation gonna be like?
And it's a question that I don't think anybody really wants to address. Now, let me make it a little worse for you, Sandra. Let me bring it home. You've heard me talk about the Browns Ferry nuclear power plant near Athens, Alabama. 18 miles from where I grew up.
Yeah.
Check this out from the Associated Press. Federal regulators ordered in-depth inspections Tuesday at a nuclear power plant run by the Tennessee Valley Authority in northern Alabama after deciding the failure of an emergency cooling system there could have been a serious safety problem. The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission issued a rare red finding against Browns Ferry Nuclear Power Plant after it investigated how a valve on a residual heat removal system became stuck shut. Safety regulators said only 5 red findings, the most severe ranking the agency gives to problems uncovered in its inspections, have been issued nationwide in the past decade. But the thing is, this thing was stuck shut in an emergency. Goodbye.
Well, I'm sorry to be completely ignorant, but what about this huge-ass river that's flooding all over the place? I'm sorry, you know, they're releasing the Mississippi to save something else. I really don't understand how it works, but that don't sound right.
Yeah, they're going to flood Cajun country to save New Orleans.
Okay, well, I don't know what. I knew some, you know, once again, winners and losers. Everything is like that in this country. So I didn't know what the deal was. I just heard some farmers complaining because they're...
Well, they already flooded the hundreds of thousands of acres of farmland in, Missouri?
Okay, so this is strange. These are like, what, biblical-type floods? I mean, what's happening?
Well, yeah, they're 100-year floods that now happen every 3 years.
10 years, yeah. I hear you. I mean,
it's a wholesale, it hasn't happened yet, but it's something that cries out for a wholesale reexamination of the paradigm, because they're not 100-year floods anymore.
They're not. No, it's out of control, but I'll let you go, but there's a couple of other things I need to shift, because I'm really tripping on this sort of taking out everybody all over the world, because apparently Gaddafi, they're estimating that fool might be injured.
Well, Al Jazeera said they would have a live statement from him earlier today, and I didn't see the follow-up from it.
Well, there's a headline saying you can't kill me, but there's reports that he's injured. But what I'm saying is that, okay, we had jumped off from killing bin Laden to try and take out this fool in Yemen to this dictator, and it just don't stop. So, you know, it's just doing my head in.
Well, you know, Michael Moore had an essay, I saw it over at Truth Out today, where he talked about, you know, the aftermath of taking out bin Laden, and he said, can we quit now? And no, we're told no, the war cannot end. The war is perpetual.
Well, no, I'm hearing clamorings of Susan Rice and Syria now. She's going to start yelling any minute now about something. Because they're talking like, you know, apparently Obama's about to say Assad has to step down. You know, those are the words that you and I don't want to hear from this man, because he quiet, but he's deadly. And next thing you know, they bomb in Syria, you know, because they have to keep the balance of power with Israel there and all.
And, there was one, I didn't even get to it in the course of the show over the last couple of weeks, but I saw this one little brief mention. There's a Twitterer out there called Angry Arab News Service.
Oh, shit, okay.
And there's amazing stuff that gets out there, and one of them was this demand, and, you know, it was one of those moments where you go, yeah, well, that strange bedfellows stuff, that's true. It was an urgent demand from the Israelis that the Saudi royal house be protected at all costs.
Well, see.
Yeah, just let that one roll around for a couple of minutes, Sandra.
Oh no! Well, no, the whole end game is all around propping up that. That's the big prize, Bob, is the stability of Saudi Arabia. And they're about to do a civil war in Yemen, and their economy is about to collapse.
And it's I guess what, in the midst of the fog of that civil war, is that when we're going to find the opportunity to go and sort of disappear, Mr. Alaki?
Sort out that American?
Yeah, that
American. Graduated from a university in Colorado?
Yeah.
This man is born here. Let's make this clear. I'm tripping. I'm like, wait a minute. I can put up some hateful YouTube videos, and next thing you know, Obama's trying to take my ass out. Okay, I haven't heard this man actually have done it. You know what I'm saying? It's just horrible rhetoric on his part.
And I've got one to add to the malaise or the miss the sense of discomfort. I ran across this over at Raw Story. Headline, Sandra, Obama administration claims right to censor unclassified materials.
Oh, okay. Is this some sort of fallout from the WikiLeaks?
No. This is the case of former National Security Agency executive Thomas Drake, indicted last April, accused of funneling documents to an unnamed reporter at an unnamed newspaper for stories that have not been identified. Well, I tell you what, there's your journalistic who, what, when, where, how, why, and why much, right? The president's lawyers have made a unique and potentially unprecedented claim. With less than a month before Drake's trial begins, the Obama administration has filed a memo with the court claiming that the Classified Information Procedures Act gives judges the right to censor and withhold material that is unclassified. In other words, keep data and evidence, you know, evidence away from the defense. When the entire, you know, the entire modern criminal jurisprudential system is predicated on the fact that the prosecution is not allowed to hide, what is it called, Brady material?
Right. That
exculpatory evidence?
Yeah, this is going into banana republic tyranny really quickly. And I might add, I'm not interested in an Obama's face or voice popping up on my fucking phone.
No.
You know about that, right?
No.
There's a plan. There's a chip in most all smartphones, but you know, and they want to make them mandatory in all phones in a year, so they can do this. Oh, hey, you know, a dirty bomb went off in New York. You know, you need to do whatever type of emergency.
What?
Thing. Well, yeah, it's like something from.
Now, I'm not being an ass. I mean, this isn't NAFTA superhighway stuff, is it?
This is from the White House page or whatever. It's a policy they're trying to do. It's to update the emergency service thing. So you won't hear that signal anymore. You'll get to hear Obama or his face or his likeness or some madness like that. I'm serious. And the civil.
So they're going to transfer the emergency broadcast notification system to the cell phone towers?
It's going to be like that. The Civil Liberty Union, you know, that people are kind of freaking out about it. And, I mean, I just read a couple of articles. But, yeah, listen, that's frightening.
Well, and that's like this story with this criminal trial, Sandra. This is really, really dark business. And this isn't anything that was, you know, this is not the excesses of the Bush administration anymore. This isn't John Yoo. This isn't the Alberto torture boy Gonzalez. This is coming from the Obama administration. Mr. Drake's criminal defense counsel was absolutely just gobsmacked, horrified. They said, there is no authority for this unprecedented assertion in the context of a criminal case.
Yeah, well, no, but remember when we were talking and you gave us a choice of three possibilities after the Bin Laden assassination, and I picked escalation.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if they're going to start bombing Syria. I mean, who knows? But, you know, this isn't a pullback. Especially with Obama and his civil liberty record is just horrific. Good night. It's really bad.
I read that case, and just maybe because it speaks to the sort of academic geek in me, I went, no, really, no.
Yeah, no, that's it.
Because it's a statute about civil stuff, and the Obama administration is arguing that it should be used in the context of a criminal case when there is, you know, 200 years of jurisprudence about not having trial by ambush.
Right, and so once again, I have to question when liberals get hysterical about, oh my God, we got to reelect him because it's the Supreme Court. Well, I'm sorry, I'm not that comforted. If he's behaving this way, what? He's going to put somebody in the court who's going to protect his ass. If he's killing people around the world and.
Well, I mean, hasn't that happened twice so far now?
Well, I'm just saying, so I don't need to be lectured about, oh, no, we have to protect the court. And I'm like, I don't know. Actually, I'll let you go, but a headline, unions agreed to $1.6 billion in concessions in Connecticut. Here we go. And I'll just end for the people. Remember, this austerity was caused by the banks screwing us over and then being bailed out. And now we're being screwed over again. Have a good evening.
Yeah, and meantime, the lobster lunches have not even slowed down.
Exactly. All right.
All right. Bye. Take care, Sandra. Bye now. Have a good weekend. Sandra calling from California. Yeah, an additional $1.6 billion in concessions in Connecticut. Yeah, the governor's a Democrat. Just, again, take that inside yourself and let it roll around a little bit. There are a lot of, I mean, I don't know don't know how to express this. Being a Republican is generally 99.9% of the time solid indicia that you're out to screw somebody. But the problem is the rising percentage of Democrats for whom that is also true. You know, states deal with their own state budgets, and they don't have going for them the federal government can print money. As Sandra has noted, the debt is in the same currency as the... Right. But this austerity really... What did you do to deserve austerity? Let's put it that way. What did you do? How did you personally make this all fall apart so that you're the one who pays the price? You know, I'm tired. I'm very tired of hearing people say things like, well, I heard Howard Dean say it this morning that show hosted usually by that guy who probably killed his intern down in Florida. But I heard Howard Dean say everything has to be on the table. If we're gonna deal with the debt, we have to deal with defense. We have to deal with Medicare. We have to deal with Medicaid. We have to deal with Social Security. It all has to be on the table. And bless his heart, you know, that's Howard Dean. I like Howard Dean. But I was up, you know, I was up and screaming at the television, why? Why? Because Granny did not cause the economy to collapse. Granny did not precipitate the subprime crisis. Granny was not involved in any credit default swaps. Granny wasn't trading on the margin. But Granny is, by God, gonna pay. I also tweeted earlier today a statement by, really, James Mulva. James Mulva is the CEO of ConocoPhillips. I like to think that if I was a board member of ConocoPhillips and I understood the fiduciary duty I had to my company, I would not accede to the hiring of a CEO whose last name was a very well-known joke from Seinfeld. Mulva. But he had the nerve, the temerity, the unmitigated gall to look at those senators yesterday and say, well, we need the subsidies because, well, you know, we have taxes to pay. What? Taxes? No, because taxes have gone up. Taxes have gone up. And, you know, that was one of those, Ferg hadn't gotten on the bus yet. No, boy, go get me a peanut butter and banana sandwich and bring me the Elvis gun. I'm shooting the TV some more. The CEO of ConocoPhillips, one of the five largest oil companies on the planet, or in America, with a straight face, looked at a bunch of senators and said, well, we need the subsidies because taxes have gone up. Taxes are higher now. No, they haven't. You godforsaken liar. Don't pee down my leg and tell me it's raining. And some little right-winger was on the panel. He said, well, you know, this was just another show trial. No, when you have a show trial, somebody gets taken out behind the building and shot. No such luck with CEO James Mulva. God almighty. Line's open if you want to get involved in the program. Let's go back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
It's a madcap Mondo meltdown everywhere you look.
Everything must go.
Everywhere. And this has been tough for me because I have not had a computer this week. My disk been able to listen to your show since Monday. And, I mean, I know they make, don't they make, like, internet receivers? I don't know what, if they're under $200 yet or not, but why would you want that if you have a computer? But
well, yeah, they do. I mean, there's tabletop internet radios, Reverbo, but why would you want that if you can just get a brand shiny new smartphone that'll have Barack Obama's disembodied head telling you to head for the hills? And you can also listen to the horn on it. That's one of the lovely things.
No, I don't know if my phone can do that, but needless to say, there is more going on now. I mean, it is just, you want to follow Rome, you're just anywhere this week, just anywhere. Now, let's look at a couple of things here that seemingly, and you'll like this, this is that connect the dot stuff that Sandra likes so much. By the way, and we'll start with, I'll echo Sandra, the phrase economic collapse. Yes, I did hear that in relation to the country of Yemen today. So you know you're in for a ride when you hear those words.
Well, because that means the buzzards are going to start circling.
Oh, yeah.
And the problem is, in the 21st century, the buzzards have guns, Reverbo.
Oh, they do. They got 50 calibers mounted on the back of pickup trucks.
And in the doors of helicopters.
So let's take a look at some of their stuff and see what maybe they're not so disparate. I have a feeling we're not going to stay well chumped for too long in this conversation. So let's see. Well, the Middle East is a good place to start. We've got some people over there like the Syrians and the Yemenis and Mr. Gaddafi who have decided they're just not going down without taking everybody down with them. They're not leaving without just raising the place. Just what did the Germans used to call that when they retreated? They just
scorched earth.
Yeah, pretty much. Just let's just take everybody out. So that's always nice to do. And then we've got that. And then let's take a look at the thing you mentioned about the oil company. Call before Congress, and you know, unlike remember, General Motors decided they had a little faux pas. They were coming to beg for money, and they all showed up in their private Zeppelins. Remember that?
I do. The mooring masts outside the Capitol were quite crowded that day.
They were. It's odd because not too many people do remember that, but I knew you would. And so then they thought better of that and showed up, I think, the next time in those Chevy Novas or whatever. They thought that would be a little better deal. But the oil company boys decided to go ahead and show up in their Armani suits. And, you know, they really did point their fingers, wag their fingers at these senators. And essentially they said, you all know who, you must have forgot who you're talking to here. We're big energy. Maybe you forgot who signs your checks. Maybe that was it.
Yeah, let's not get all froggy.
That's essentially what they said. The guy from Chevron said that. These people got up on their hind legs and they were reading the senators the Riot Act about just who do you think you're talking to?
Yeah, I ain't some constituent from back in Busted Knuckle, buddy.
Well, I don't get it. They're obviously not too big to fail because they're nowhere near failing. $35 billion in profits in the first quarter is, I don't know, that sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah.
By the way,
and speaking of getting on their hind legs, Michael just wrote in Reverbo and said, also in the Senate hearing, with a straight face, Senator Jay Rockefeller got on him about subsidies, too. And I saw that clip, and like Michael, I was touched. It's like, dang, Jay, how are you pulling that off? Now, how do you not just bust out into paroxysms of laughter? Because, you know, Jay's a big proponent of clean coal technology and subsidies all. There's not enough corporate welfare on Earth to satisfy the coal industry.
No, there is. I think somebody I appreciated, I mean, okay, the Senate is a bunch of dysfunctional aristocrats, but leaving that aside for a moment, I think I heard someone basically just ask one of these dudes just directly. He said something like, well, if you, we have to make a choice here, and we you're going to, we have to choose, we might have to choose between making it, you know, taking away college loans or taking away your tax breaks. Which one would you choose? And the guy pretty much just said, he said, well, our corporation's pretty much in the business of subordinating a democracy to corporatism. So we choose the tax break. I mean, he basically just came in. This stuff is overt now, Bob. This stuff is just out.
No, they're out in the open. They're not hiding. This is...
No. This is out. Everyone's just seeing here. They said, you know, we don't give a shit about kids going to college, to answer your question, if that was your question.
And, of course, Orrin Hatch was there, Reverbo, to have the visual moment of the day, because Orrin Hatch brought a visual aid of a dog standing on a pony's back and said, well, I guess we know what today's going to be. Because he was going to make sure that the oil companies understood that he knows what to do when the whistle blows.
Well, I mean, they sign their checks. I don't think there's anything. Okay, so we got the Middle East. We've got these the oil companies pretty well clear on what they want to do, and I see all the Republicans just sitting there going, "Hey, sounds good to me." Yeah, let's just decimate the middle class as fast as possible. We're, you know, count us in. So that was good. And then, of course, let's see what else we have here. We're going to tie all this together, as you can imagine, into a madcap Mondo meltdown. So I heard Mayor Bloomberg in some, I don't know what kind of, how many bad clams this guy ate last night. You know, we're down. How much are we down? Is it 13 trillion? We're in the trillions. We're down. Okay? And he decided the best way to recoup some of this money is to lay off 4,000 teachers in New York City. Now, I did the math on this, although my calculator isn't working too well. Let's just say these teachers make $50,000 a year. Well, I think that came out to $200 million. That work for you?
Yeah.
Something like that, $200 million? And we're looking for, oh, I don't know, let's just say 13 or 14 trillion. So we have $200 million.
Anybody want to express that as a percentage of, yeah.
Okay, so that's a good way to do it. You know, let's not try to go after a whole bunch of it at once. Let's just try to just squeeze these little people for nickels, and we're needing, you know, $10,000.
Right. Yeah, well, because you weren't able to listen, you didn't hear the story last night, Reverbo, about the Obama plan, and this is how, according to an article in Salon, this is how he's going to prove that he's really not a socialist, the Obama plan to sell off excess federal property. And what they say they're going to sell off are like equipment shacks and, you know, lawnmower shacks and warehouses and old office buildings that nobody's using anymore.
Uh-huh.
And that's how we're going to pay down the debt. You know, at best, I mean, let's say it's a nice office building. At best, we're going to pay off the debt. Yeah, what? $1 million at a time? It takes a lot of millions to turn something into a billion, let alone a trillion.
Yeah, yard sale's a good way to go.
Bake sale.
That's an excellent way to go. Okay, so we've got, and I don't know what's up with Mayor Bloomberg. So that's just insanity. Of course, we're just, and here we go. Now let's move on to compare that to Wisconsin. And I was thinking about that woman, that election commissioner.
Yes, Ms. Nicholas.
Right, who started off, like, she didn't need to work, you know, overtime. She didn't need to attain a degree of incompetent crony. She just answered an ad for incompetent crony and just kind of hit the ground running on that job, right?
Right, same as the 26-year-old University of Wisconsin dropout with the two DUIs, who just sort of stumbled into an $80,000 a year job at the Wisconsin Department of the Environment. Because his daddy was a big donor to Scott Walker.
Oh, sure. So, I mean, what I think we ought to do makes sense to me is to keep cutting those people payroll checks. But let's start laying off teachers. I mean, this makes perfect sense.
Well, don't they prove that education is a non-requirement?
It doesn't seem to be any part of your duties or responsibilities that hinge on any of that. I mean, let's just keep paying these people and laying off teachers and cops and whatever else. So here we go. We've got the Middle East. We've got the oil companies. We've got Mayor Bloomberg. We've got these complete just shit-for-brains crony incompetence, not to mention, you know, election fraud. We essentially have, so I've tied it all together, and I've come up with just something really boring, and that is maintain the status quo at all costs, even if it means burning down the house.
By any means necessary. You know, I was thinking about the other, I was actually, you and I must have this thing, you know, the telepathically, because I was thinking the other day, you know, that by any means necessary was a phrase that came out of Malcolm X's movement, right?
Okay.
And boy, when he said that, it scared, he scared some white people.
That he did.
Because, you know, you achieve equality by any means necessary. Whereas, you know, you had Dr. King over there going, you know, we're not going to shoot anybody. We're going to sit in the street. We're going to sit at the lunch counter. We're going to be nonviolent. Malcolm, in his heyday, was it by any means necessary? And
they're going to get their demonstrations, and we haven't gotten any for the war. We haven't gotten any. I mean, yeah, we got.
Where that took me, Reverbo, is that, by God, corporate America learned, they didn't learn squat from Dr. King, but they learned a bunch because, yeah, it doesn't matter what it costs. It doesn't matter if it means the end of public education. They're in favor of the end of public education. It doesn't matter if it means the end of fire departments. They're opposed to publicly funded fire departments. It doesn't matter if it means the end of the government's ability to respond to the poor, the needy, the unemployed, the suffering, because they don't support any of that. They want to preserve their status quo, as you just noted, Reverbo, by any means necessary.
Well, and their means is now to promote outright class warfare. I mean,
them against us.
Oh, I mean, and again, the chumps, the well-chumped, just fall into this, just like flies on shit. I'm sorry to say it, but that's you can depend on them to sharpen those wooden stakes and to light those torches and to head for my house.
Yeah, it's no longer the castle on the hill.
No.
They're heading into the burbs, the projects.
It's so amazing. Instead of thinking, huh. Who has, like, where are the last good jobs in the United States? Who has them, and how did that happen? And somebody goes, oh, I don't know, it might be the people who still have collective bargaining. And no one pops up and says, well, how the heck did we get that? No, what they do is they pop up and go, well, let's just go burn them off!
What are they doing with good wages? We got to end that collective bargaining. They got to be like us. This here's America, and we got to be equal, I tell you, equal.
Right. We have to be reduced to just the lowest common denominator. The whole world is now tied together. And look how quickly we did that. On a lighter note here, I still have not seen that headline where bullet sled travel, or the new bullet sled route inaugurated from Jefferson Davis Station out of, looks like, Spartanburg over to Greenville, and then I believe it was heading down to Columbia, Somerville, Charleston, Beaufort, and Point South.
No.
You see anything about that?
No, I missed that one. The bullet train, the bullet, the... The Montgomery to Atlanta via Birmingham bullet train is also... no, I missed that announcement as well.
I wonder if Sanders seen anything about a bullet sled. Well, but yeah, I'm still waiting for that one. But we'll keep waiting. Oh, one other thing, just for you and David from Maine, I did catch Source Code.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, by David Bowie. He's directed by David Bowie's son, Duncan.
Yes.
And yeah, I think I would like to see what else. Where he's going, and maybe he can raise more money, and I think he's a very interesting director. And
well, if you get an opportunity, see what he did before it, because it's called Moon.
Yeah, I read about that. It sounds very interesting. It just stars one actor in
yeah.
the whole movie.
Yeah.
It sounds like a really interesting... I liked Source Code, although the screenwriter seems to be... has mined... the storyline of the going back in time and changing things, I think, enough at this point, because he also did Groundhog Day.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that, because I saw some Groundhog Day in there.
Oh, it's way, it's exactly in there. So, and I mean, I love time travel movies, don't get me wrong. And there was some suspension, there was a few problems in Source Code that I wasn't quite, but that's the great thing about time travel movies, there's always some paradoxes and problems in there. But I did enjoy it.
If you do like time travel movies, I just saw this on Netflix. I can highly recommend Hot Tub Time Machine. Anything that you would, but yeah, it's very, very good.
Now, you don't exactly know what I would, etc.
Okay, it doesn't sound like something I would. I mean, it sounds sophomoric and juvenile, but then you look at the cast and you go, well, Rob Corddry.
I'm going to write this down. I love the title. I thought you were going to tell me to go see 12 Monkeys, which is an excellent time travel movie.
Well, now, this one's funny. There's a segment where one guy, it doesn't give anything away, they find themselves back in the 80s. And one guy looks at a passing person and says, hey, what color is Michael Jackson? And she looks and says, well, black. And he goes, oh, no! And he realizes he really has time traveled.
Oh, man.
Crispin Glover, the single weirdest actor in Hollywood, is in it and does a great job.
Crispin Glover is in a planet... by himself. He is totally bizarre.
But I think, yeah, you'd probably get a big giggle out of that.
By the way, did you see 12 Monkeys?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Just checking on that. That is quite the movie. So, I think we've covered it for the evening. I think we should just keep paying incompetent cronies, and we should be laying off skilled teachers. Works for me.
Because in the long run, that's the America you want in 100 years.
Democracy subordinate to corporatism. That's not my line, but it's a scary one.
And it's a true one. And the thing is, eventually, when you let that happen, the natural outgrowth of that, Reverbo, is that you move from democracy suborned to corporate interests to the point where democracy, much like certain time travel movies, just sort of becomes very thin, sort of like Marty McFly, and disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it's just corporatocracy.
Well, or, I mean, I don't know what's going on. I mean, or you just start mowing people down just sort of randomly. That's what seems to be happening in Syria and Yemen. They're just mowing them down. I mean, some of these people aren't, you know, they're just out there going, hey, what's the deal? And the deal is you're dead.
But long, long ago, I remember an episode of All in the Family in which Meathead was complaining about world overpopulation. And Archie's response was, you know what? Anytime the world gets overpopulated, you know what happens? The good Lord God Almighty sends along a nice, healthy war and cuts out that surplus population. That's what happens. Welcome to Syria. Welcome to Libya. Welcome to Yemen. Welcome to Pakistan, Iraq, yeah. Afghanistan. Just taking out your surplus population there.
Yeah, these countries that don't even, I mean, if ExxonMobil, I think if these, if they were actually a country, they would have like the 16th or 17th highest GNPs in the world. Afghanistan, their entire country only clocks in at about $2 billion.
Right, but why, if you're a corporation, why would you want the trouble? You know, governments, as they've proven, are costly things. And as you've suggested, it is probably much more cost-effective, and the accounting department will be much happier with you if you report back that at no cost whatsoever, except for maybe a few campaign contributions and a little Citizens United money thrown around here and there, you have suborned an entire government and taken complete control of its military-industrial complex. I mean, you'll probably get a bonus for that, Reverbo.
You're talking about the United States?
That would be us.
Yeah, that would be us. Don't forget he signs those checks. Didn't you think, real quick before I go, I reset this, yes, you saw source code?
Yes.
Okay. Didn't you think it might have been more effective to just end the movie on that really nice freeze frame?
Yeah, I think so.
Instead of going into the Hollywood ending where they're just kind of frolicking and doing the kissy face and, I mean, he was dead, wasn't he? I mean, did I miss something there?
Yeah.
I really like that shot. I thought that was just a really cool shot, you know, and it just, that's it. Time stopped.
But see, that's the pretty woman effect. You know the story of Pretty Woman, right?
You saw the Julia Roberts movie?
Yeah, and Richard Gere. They made it when they finished the original draft of it, or the original shot shooting, and had it put together in what they thought was a final form. It had a realistic ending where Richard Gere just leaves the hooker.
Hmm.
And they showed it to test audiences, and all the test audiences said, "Well, why didn't he come back and marry the hooker?"
This is why you don't show things to morons.
And so they had to go back and reshoot the ending of Pretty Woman to have Richard Gere come back and marry the hooker.
Ain't that sweet. Well, for all we know, they had an alternate ending. You know, they might have done that with Ghost Code, too. I don't know. But
my favorite movie for alternate endings is, of course, Clue.
You know, I didn't see Clue.
No, it had an all-star cast, and it was just like the game Clue. It could end any number of ways. Colonel Mustard in the billiard room with the lead pipe.
The whole point of the movie was to have alternate endings.
Right. Miss Peacock in the conservatory with the wrench.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I'm vaguely familiar with the game, yeah.
And when it was released for general, what happens is at the end of the movie they show you all of the endings. And it's really quite fun.
I bet it is. But that's designed into the movie. It doesn't seem like an afterthought.
No, that was deliberate.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you end a movie because, when you change the ending of a movie because the focus group decided that the rich guy needs to unrealistically go back and marry the hooker. Hmm.
Yeah, that movie was just, God, it just, I don't even like, I'll kick Julia Roberts out of the tent. Not a lot of men might do that. I will. She doesn't do anything for me. But,
yeah, see, that's like me and Angelina Jolie. Nothing.
Oh, God, yeah, just nothing. But
okay, I'm going to get hate mail for this portion of the program. Thanks, Reverbo.
I don't know.
Sexist bastards!
Yeah, yeah. Jesus. All right, well, listen, you stay well, chump, now, you hear?
Absolutely. Oh, by the way, we've got a new bumper sticker to think about. I had a posting on my Facebook page from our buddy Horst, who does all of the videos of the audio over at his page Horzak at YouTube, and he said he was listening to Mark's call last night, and the idea for a bumper sticker popped into his head. History is no lying matter.
I like it.
Isn't that nice? Fits on the bumper sticker real good. Everything.
So Horst, I can listen to archives of your show on YouTube.
He pulls clips, not a full archive. He just pulls clips.
Is White Rose still a going concern?
Absolutely.
Okay, because like I said, I haven't heard anything this week, and it's just that's rough. Without a computer, you don't realize.
Yeah, we got to get a cell. We got to get a smartphone in your hands, because as long as you're paying for the bandwidth, you can just sit there and set it up to do Wi-Fi on your phone and listen to anything you want to.
I guess I could, but I got them big speakers hooked up, man. I got an amplifier. I've got a serious audio system on that computer. All I did was lose my DVD drive, which is the least important thing of all. But
oh God, I thought you meant your hard drive had gone south.
No, it's just something stupid, but you still have to bring it in. But at any rate, very good talking to you, and hopefully we connected some dots, which is always fun.
Yeah, look, it's a pirate ship.
Oh God! Here's one more thing. The four source codes. So I'm in there. We're in there, and we're watching these previews. Previews for like, oh God, Pirates of the Caribbean 16. What is Johnny Depp? Is his career is heading to Area 51? I'm telling you. And then there's some horrible movie with that guy, The Rock, and Vin Diesel. And then there's some other horrible movie with some more cars blowing up. And it started to occur to me that these were all the same movies with different titles.
Yes, they are.
No, they really are.
And right, and the movie phone guy announcement, they all begin, in a world where, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, and they also all suck. That's another common thread to them.
Yeah, there is the sucking part.
God, they were. I mean, I just after a while, I thought, why do I want to see these movies? I just saw this movie in 2 minutes. I saw everything I needed to see about this. It was horrible, and get me out of here. Vin Diesel.
Oh, I know.
Explain that guy. How do you explain The Rock?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I refuse to follow anybody who isn't a name.
How do you explain Richard Nixon? But
no. Yeah, I refuse to go to a movie featuring somebody who's named after geology.
God, how, Jesus, God, why aren't we in?
To the Thrifty 250 being completely fulfilled for up to today. Now, that doesn't take into it, but wow, thank you. Thank you very, very much. Email coming in from Darlene. She's from Connecticut. She says, Connecticut Governor Malloy, in essence, held over the heads of the state employees the threat of what was happening in Wisconsin. During town meetings held throughout the state to introduce his proposed budget, Malloy essentially said that the state employees should consider themselves lucky, that at least he wasn't thinking at this point about doing to them what Scott Walker was doing in Wisconsin. Wonder how much the threat that Malloy could go all Scott Walker on the state employees factored into their concessions, Darlene asks. That and the layoff notices he started issuing to the employees. Oh, and by the way, please tell Sandra that Malloy wanted $2 billion in concessions. I guess the state employees should heave a sigh of relief that it appears Malloy will accept the $1.6 billion offer. He says he can try to find the difference elsewhere, which probably means he could have done so all along. Meanwhile, notes Darlene, my taxes and those of the state employees are also going up a full percentage point. I'm actually okay with that for myself. What I am not okay with is that anyone in Connecticut who is making $1 million plus is only seeing a, get this, 0.5% increase in their taxes. The Malloy administration claims that this is fair and that the wealthy in Connecticut will be paying the full taxes they owe for the first time in decades. People throughout Connecticut had begged Malloy to make the rich pay their fair share. After all, Malloy talked about shared sacrifice. Darlene closes by saying, well, I'm still not seeing the shared sacrifice. Well, see, that's the thing, though, Darlene. You are. The working people are sharing the sacrifice. Our betters, well, they're not like us. And that's why they don't have to share. See how it works? Yeah, me neither. I'm just watching here the technology. looks like we have crapped out for some reason or another. So we'll take a little break, hopefully get some of this resolved, and come back with hopefully what will be your phone calls. Cross your fingers. Oh, dear, getting worse. We may only have a two-hour program tonight if I don't get some stuff sorted out. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. This is Friday on the Front Porch. And for some reason or another, something that Sandra was saying to me earlier just made me think of this piece. We'll be back.
Thank you. so, don't you think so, Murray?
Great.
Oh, love, oh, love, just to see them acting on the silver screen. Oh, my Clark Gable, Fairbanks, Maureen O'Sullivan, fantasy would fill my life, and I love fantasy so much. Did you see in the morning light? I really talked, yes I did, to that early morning light. I was privileged to be, as I am to this day, to be with you, to be with you, to be with you, to be with you, to be with you.
Of you people to come here this evening, and I know you have been searched, but what you don't realize is that in the back of the Mortis Falcon,
I have a goose.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Well, running that intro, and for that matter, running that music, was largely for the benefit of the people who listen in delay or on podcast, because I'm not sending anything right now. And I just talked to the fine folks at CityNet who are on the problem, but they will not have it solved any time in the near future that I'm aware of. Trying to get a stream to load. Won't happen. So I guess that starts, at least for me, that starts the weekend a little bit early. But I tell you what, I mean, since we are, you know, we are at least recording all of this, I think, I see no reason not to at least take, if you, well, the way everything crashed, I may not even have callers on the line anymore. But let's see, just as a matter of curiosity, if I do. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? No, I don't. So, thanks everybody for a wonderful broadcast week up until this moment. I really appreciate your time and your kind contributions. I'm going to go ahead and knock off for the weekend because this is going to be an exercise in futility. It's 12 minutes past 8 o'clock here on this Friday evening on the East Coast. I can't even get the chat room to load. So, I wish you all well. We'll work on this. God willing, dog willing, flying spaghetti monster willing, we'll have it sorted by Monday. How's that? Okie doke. Thanks. Rick Smith will be coming your way in about 47 minutes. So, be around for that by all means. And let me just take an ample amount of time, instead of hurrying through at this point, to thank everybody who makes all of this happen. First and foremost, that is you, with your kind contributions that keep all of this on the air and going, and the bills paid. And they are, you know, they're substantial. Thank you. And we got very, very close to being done for Friday, at least, this evening. Very close. And it is much appreciated. So, with that in mind, let me also extend thanks, as always, to Lottie, our chat room moderator, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to Susan for reminding me about Friday the 13th. It was well done. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy, as she continues to recover. Thanks to our op-ed correspondent, Reverbo, Cavalcade of Crazy. Installment 4 of Looking for Work in a Cavalcade of Crazy is up at headonradionetwork.com, and it is inspired, thought-provoking satire that deserves your attention. So please, go and read it. headonradionetwork.com. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, web designer, webmaster, musician, producer, and darn fine radio host in his own right down there in Australia. And thanks to Ben Birch. Ben Birch has a fundraiser going on at whiteRoseSociety.org. You know, he's carried a lot of the costs of this on his own. And we try to help where and when we can. But tain't easy. And he does need some help, but he never sends a bill. And when you contribute to White Rose, you make it possible for anyone who wants it to get podcasts of Stephanie Miller, of Mike Malloy, of Tom Hartman, of this show, of Rick Smith. That's what your contributions do. So thank you. And of course, thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Visit the websites and see the hard work that they do. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.